everybody. If we could start up. What's that? Hey.
Hey.
Need a bell, pal. Chris.
You have the gavel, okay. Chris. Use it.
Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you very much for returning. I think we're going to try to get through one more presentation before the lunch break in the executive session. And for that, I'm going to turn to Ed McMillan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my privilege to report on the Audit, Budget, Finance, and Facilities Committee, which took place on July 12th. All members of the board, including Trustee Stovall, Oliver Montgomery, and Student Trustee Olivier. The minutes were approved. We had a design presentation on Eikenberry Commons Phase E and G by firm FGMM Architects. We had four reports that were made to the committee, one by University Auditor Julie Zamaitis presenting the two-year audit plan for internal audit and also discussed some audit risk areas. We had an enterprise risk management project presentation by Dan Mortland, who will be making a presentation in a few minutes discussing risk management areas, including shareholder roles, governance, and reporting. Also, we had a presentation on Office of Business and Financial Services relative to compliance audit and state and federal findings relative to university grants and contracts. Heather Habernacker made a presentation relative to the legal and procedural framework for doing business with minority and female-owned vendors with discussions of ways to increase participation, and we had further conversation about that yesterday. We had six items that were reviewed and were recommended by the committee to be put forward. I won't go through them in detail, but items 15, 16, 18, 20, 21, and 22 in the book, which give the details on each of those, and I won't take time to talk about that right now. We concluded the meeting with some brief discussions about university's preliminary operating and capital budgets for 2011-12. Yes, we're actually starting down the process and trying to prepare for that. Also, a status report on the state of the 2010 appropriation receivable, and also a possible cash borrowing potential that which was approved by the legislation. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Dan Mortland, who will make a presentation on enterprise risk management initiative at the university. Dan?
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Let's make sure that there we go. Chairman Kennedy, members of the board, and President Hogan, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about the implementation of enterprise risk management at the University of Illinois. We believe that enterprise risk management is an important initiative because the university is a large, complex, far-flung organization with shared governance and a decentralized management structure. While this environment generally provides a fertile academic culture, it also can create challenges in effectively identifying and managing risks that can have a significant impact on the university. Risk is any issue that impacts an organization's ability to meet its goals and objectives. Enterprise Risk Management, or ERM as I'll refer to it, establishes a systematic process of understanding, evaluating, and fostering action on significant risks. It promotes an environment of ownership and accountability of significant risks and a response to those risks. It considers internal, external, and importantly, cross-entity risks. And it provides a foundation for superior planning and budgeting. ERM is a systematic framework that provides a strategic approach to risk that can complement and add value to overall strategy development and the planning and budgeting process. Our vision is to create a risk-aware culture that educates its members on risk management, allowing the university to identify risks and make plans to avoid material impact on finances and operations while encouraging the acceptance of manageable risks. ERM is a portfolio approach to managing risk that may span multiple university units. Its strategic risk support and oversight, importantly, it aligns strategy and appetite for risk, and it structures identification of risk mitigation options. This slide, which is a little hard to read, but I'm not going through all the pieces, but it illustrates the spectrum of maturity of ERM implementation at various organizations. I think it best illustrates why we're implementing ERM process at this university. The initial and fragmented areas, which I'll point to right here, generally represent a non-systematic approach to risk. I placed the blue arrowhead there to mark where I believe we are at this point in time with respect to overall risk management. While these types of approaches to risk management may result in reasonable management of specific risks in specific areas, the possibility exists that other significant risks are not recognized or are managed inconsistently among stakeholders. As you can see, the third area there, top down, is a little more consistent with a systematic approach to risk and should be our immediate goal, I believe. Ultimately, being able to describe our process as risk intelligent on the right would yield the greatest value of ERM to the university. ERM emphasizes involvement at all levels of the organization. Governance of the university's ERM process begins with the Board of Trustees and flows to the president and the senior leadership. Two senior level risk management committees are proposed, the Executive Risk Management Committee and the Senior Advisory Group. The Office of Enterprise Risk Management will coordinate and facilitate. And underpinning everything are the various risk areas of the university. Importantly, University Audits uses its unique position to consult with ERM, but does not manage the process so as to maintain its independence. All stakeholders at the university would have a role in a successful ERM program. The Board of Trustees would set the tone and the environment for risk management, and it would approve the risk process, risk policies, and risk appetite levels. Senior management provides risk direction and ensures strategic, operational, financial, and compliance risks are effectively managed. The Executive Risk Management Committee maintains oversight of the risk management process and approves risk strategies. The Senior Advisory Group acts collectively but as individual subject matter experts, and it advises the Executive Risk Management Committee on matters of risk. As I said, the Office of Enterprise Risk Management coordinates risk assessment and development of mitigation strategies and risk reporting, and it coordinates the activities of both of the committees I spoke of. University Audits provides independent advice and consulting and evaluates the effectiveness and contributes to the improvements of risk management processes. Not shown in this slide is the role of the individual risk areas. They're eventually driven by a change in culture. The role of each unit and indeed of all employees is to consider risk and uncertainty as their respective responsibilities are undertaken. This slide shows the proposed makeup of the two new risk committees which we propose to establish in the near future. The Executive Risk Management Committee, shown at the top, is comprised of the Vice President, Chief Financial Officer, who acts as chair, the three provosts, and the University Council. This committee oversees the ERM process and has decision-making authority for significant risk strategies. The Senior Advisory Group is multidisciplined with representatives from administration and in each campus, including members of academia. As the risk landscape changes over time, the makeup of this body could also change to be consistent. This committee advises the Executive Risk Management Committee. The ERM process reports to the board, the president, and the vice president, chief financial officer. For administrative purposes, ERM reports to the senior associate vice president in the Office of Business and Financial Services. The president's policy council provides advice, and as I said, University Audits has a partnering relationship with, but is independent from, the ERM process. This complicated-looking diagram, which I won't spend much time on, shows the overall view of our of how we approach risk as a portfolio view of risk. It's based on the framework established by the Committee of Sponsoring Organizations of the Treadway Commission. The Rubik's Cube figure sort of illustrates the overall process, with the front face showing the various steps, or the eight elements, of the process. The top face of the cube shows the broad categories of risks facing the organization, that is, strategic, operations, financial, and compliance. And finally, the side face depicts the different areas of our organization, academics, energy, medical, operations, and treasury. Another complex chart, which I won't go through, but it depicts the specific process being implemented here. While all of the COSO steps that I talked about, spoke of before, are not shown here specifically, they are embodied in the process. And at this point, I should say, you know, ERM, to be successful, must be efficient, timely, and effective to be of value to the university. I want to emphasize, while it may appear complex, our process is very lean and is driven by the following principles. We want to complement the missions and the objectives of the university without being burdensome or bureaucratic. We want to provide instructive, timely information that can be acted upon effectively. We want to emphasize collaboration and partnership across the entire university, and we want to demonstrate that value is to be added through an appropriate risk management process. Finally, while ERM cannot assure that bad things won't happen, I'm going to emphasize that, it can help us better prepare for and respond to crises that might occur in the future. Finally, I'll close with a bit of a progress report. I'm in the process of completing one-on-one interviews with senior leadership regarding their views of risk facing the university. Secondly, the first product of ERM is the derivatives use policy, which you're being asked to approve today. And then going forward, there are many activities, but I want to point out one I think is critical. And we would like to conduct one-on-one interviews with members of the board to understand your views of our objectives and goals and the risks that may detour those risks and objectives. That's it for the presentation. I'd be happy to entertain any questions you might have.
I personally applaud your efforts. You know, when we first got together as a board and then as an executive committee last fall, it's one of the first things that we talked about, that is a broad enterprise risk assessment. And I know that it's a complicated thing to do in any institution, particularly complicated in one as vast as this. So I'm very impressed with your efforts.
Thank you. Thank
I
you.
Love that Rubik's Cube chart.
All right.
sent
so
that
do
around
I.
the office, in fact. But one thing I wonder is whether or not, you know, risk being sort of the product of chance and outcome, whether the outcome is evaluated properly in terms of the public perception of certain actions, and whether or not we should include the groups that are generally charged with monitoring the public response, that is Tom Hardy's group or our government affairs group, to participate in the risk assessment, because they may be able to improve the manner in which we hear the public speak about the certain right. actions by the university.
Right, I agree with that. In fact, I've already spoken with Tom. He was one of the folks that I had interviewed previously. But ERM will cover all aspects. Reputation and brand is a very key risk that many people brought up in the discussion so far. And so I think that the drivers of risk to that reputation, the public's perception of our mission, of our ability to accomplish that mission, is very important to the things we'll look at. Okay?
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe Vice President Knorr will now cover some other issues that relate to the Finance Committee. I'll just start with that introduction.
I think before I start, I think the that was a precursor to each of the board members. We'd like to set up a meeting with you at your earliest convenience to think about what's on your mind as far as the risks at the university and the top three or four items. So that was really the precursor to that those visits. This morning, just to take a few minutes to talk about the state budget and the impact on the University of Illinois, impact on higher education, and maybe focus on a few metrics with regard to the university that may be of interest to you. Go to the first slide. The state budget that was passed by the legislature in the Thursday before Memorial Day essentially kicked over a $13 billion deficit. Some of the big pieces to the $13 billion deficit start off with at least a $6 billion unpaid pile of bills that the controller of the state of Illinois has said were there. He said that there were, and from his numbers, that there were $4.7 billion bills that had been submitted and unpaid, and $2.6 billion in bills that were to be submitted that they expected to come in. So we start off with a $6 billion backlog in the payment of bills. The state needs to make a $4 billion payment statutorily into the pension fund, the public pension funds for the state of Illinois. They were going to do this via a borrowing. The borrowing was deferred, as far as approval of the borrowing has been deferred until at least after the election. The next big piece, jump past, there's a fairly large piece of about $800 million. This is the debt service that's now accruing on the pension bond, the $4.5 billion pension bond that they did in FY 2010, an item that they have to deal with. One of the biggest item is the loss of federal stimulus, $1.5 billion. Again, the state, when they passed the legislative process went through, they had this still in there, but this is where the governor concentrated in his budget cuts for purposes of the budget that was presented on July the 1st after the governor made his budget cuts. But in total, a $13 billion deficit into the fiscal year 2011 budget. How does this affect the University of Illinois? Next slide, please. The situation was that the University of Illinois basically was reduced from its, when the governor finished his cuts, reduced the appropriation for the University of Illinois, what's in orange, reduced it by $47 million. This is basically the loss of the federal stimulus. For our purposes, when putting together our budget for this next fiscal year, this is really being looked at as a permanent cut that we have to deal with in putting together our fiscal year 2011 budget and that we're dealing with and putting that into the process. Overall, the governor had cut about $96 million to higher education. And even though, and where all that money went to, it really went over to SERS, over to the university retirement system. So even though that overall pie didn't for higher education didn't shrink, the cuts to higher education went over to the retirement program. There were really no cuts in student aid. This is ISAC. This is where the MAP funding comes from. So it was not cut. And we'll take a look at the financial aid here in just a second. Community colleges essentially uncut and everything else. So the basic movement was a $100 million cut in higher education and those dollars moving over to the retirement program. The next slide. So what this means to us, taking a look at the last decade, and I've put this in constant dollars in 2010 dollars, that we've had a decrement from 2002, fiscal year 2002, where we were $974 million was the amount of the appropriation coming to the university, down to our number now, $684 million. That's in $10, and for this is for fiscal year 11. In nominal dollars, that would be $697 million for fiscal year 2011. Some of the other items there that you see there, the red are the little rescissions that we have received over the years. The yellow is the fiscal stimulus dollars that we had this last year that will not reoccur, that $45 million there. And the other blue item is essentially our contribution to health insurance, about $25 million, $25 million. Next slide. Again, what this means over for all of for education, again, put in 2010 dollars that K through 12 actually over the last decade has seen a 24% increase in funding. ISAC, which is this, again, the source of MAP funding, has had an 18.5% decrease in funding over that same period. Community college is down 26%, and higher education, the universities, public universities in Illinois, down 29% in funding from the from state tax appropriations from general revenue funds. So next slide, again, this is the status of the state university retirement system, where essentially all the employees of the university are participants in this pension plan. By the end of 2009, the unfunded liability hit the $12 billion mark. We're looking at this probably getting to the $15 billion mark by at the end of 2010, when the final numbers come out. That's the prediction that this means that the CSRS program is about 45% funded at this time. One of the drop in 2003-2004, that's when the state sold $10 billion worth of pension bonds, and they put all that money into the system, and that caused that drop in the or improvement in the unfunded liability. But that's the status of the university retirement system. I want to put out, you know, a good side. Next slide, please. Is what the state does pay on behalf of university employees as far as their retirement benefits and as far as their health care. Right now, for fiscal year 2011, we're projecting that in this budget, there will be $722 million in total benefits paid on behalf of university employees. The little slice at the top, $25 million, is in the red, is essentially our contribution to health care that we've made on a continual basis for the last 10 years. The contribution to health care, which is the purple, is about $337 million as a projection for health care. Again, all of this is handled through CMS, but this will be the amount of health care benefits that are being paid for university employees by the state of Illinois. And lastly is the contribution to pension. The state makes the employer contribution to a pension, the match, and that number $350 million for the next year. But you can see the very, you know, profound progression of the costs associated with those. Looking at the university specifically next, and where most of the story lies, one of the things that the state did is a poor indicator for us, forecaster for us, is the state did expand the lapse period from 2 months to 6 months. This is essentially the period of time that you're allowed to, the state is being allowed to legally pay the bills of the prior fiscal year. That tells us that we're going to be continue to see a very slow payment cycle. As of June 30th of 2010, at the end of the fiscal year, our receivable from the state was $279 million. What that represents is that the state paid us 60% of our 2010 appropriation during the fiscal year. We have, during the course of the whole year, if you take a look at what the state sent us, they sent us $418 million that's attributable to FY 2010. And they received, and they sent us about $125 million that was the receivable last year, so 2009. So about $545 million was the total cash received from the state, exclusive of the fiscal stimulus money. As far as the receivable itself, based on the legislation that was passed, we are able to borrow approximately 75% of that number if need be. We have sent the certification process that's required under the state legislation over to the state controller's office to certify what our receivable is as of June 30, and we basically use that as for purposes of the borrowing base. We have RFP'd the borrowing and received back some good responses from banks. We're working through the process, working through with banks. I think we're heading in a direction, if we do borrow, it will be in the along the line of credit for purposes of a borrowing for under this borrowing scenario, this borrowing legislation. I think I'll go on to the next slide, please. If we take a look at basically looking at the receivable from the past 4 years, what this shows, the purple on the right, is that we ending with a $279 million receivable. At the end of 2009, $125 million was the receivable. That was paid off in July, August, and the last little piece was paid off in September of 2009 from the prior year. We essentially had no receivables at the end of the two prior fiscal years. So you can see the deterioration of the of the receivable and the cash coming in from the state of Illinois. I guess I would just report we're going to start a new billing cycle. We start with in July. We started billing again. We have billed so far $41 million against the FY 2011 appropriation. But we have received about $9 million for 2010. We've received that this week. So we did receive, had a payment from the state of Illinois. Moving on to the next, one of the big pluses has been the income fund with the tuition revenues. Essentially, this is for the year. Now, we had a budget of $730 million. We actually billed $735 million. That amount includes the $56 million of assistance MAP money. The monetary awards from ISAC is built into those numbers. One of the reasons that how could we be billed more than we have in the budget is that essentially the assumptions we made as far as enrollments were exceeded. We had profound retention we did not kept those high enrollments throughout the whole academic year, and that's the reason for that. And I guess the collections have been very good. So we've been very good status as far as the collections on the tuition for FY 2010. It's an interest always, the amount of financial aid that's available to students coming to the University of Illinois. Break this down just over the last half a dozen years, and particularly focusing on what we're looking at as far as fiscal year 2011, where $162 million would be made available to students in the form of financial aid and grants. The piece at the top is the supplemental financial aid. This is a function of our tuition. And you can see the pop really coming from between 2010 and 2011. This is the multiplier factor against the tuition that was passed in May, and basically the result. The red is the Pell. That's increased in 2010, 2011. And this is really brought about by changes in Pell, a minimum of $600 increase in individual Pell grants that's part of the federal package. Lastly is the ISAC number, the MAP money that comes from the state, fairly static, again roughly around this $56 to $60 million number that's coming from the state through ISAC to the university, comes in both in the fall and the spring. This is again just a demonstration very quickly that we now have had a very formal crossover between state assistance and tuition. In 2011, right now we're looking at roughly a budget of $826 million in total tuition for the university, and as I mentioned before, $679 million is the appropriation for 2011 that we're going to be working with. Again, we've had major growth in student population over this past 10 years, but you can see the deterioration of state aid and the increase in the income fund. Next slide, please. Very quick scoreboard. I want to confirm what Chancellor Muir said, that of our $169 million of stimulus awards, that $76 million comes from UIC, $98 million is from Urbana. In those, we've submitted a total proposals of 1,176. 330 awards to date. So we have batting about 28% on our awards versus those submissions. The value of those awards, $169 million in total, $170 million in total. And expenditures to date from those awards, the $32 million. Jobs that were created from these awards, we're posting 352 jobs coming from those awards. Next to last slide is the hospital. Again, it's been echoed, the hospital is doing very well this year. The hospital operating income, about $47 million through May. Probably will exceed that through the year. One of the reasons for that, there's a couple of reasons. Number one is there are some one-time items in the revenues for the hospital, some Medicaid payments that were made for the hospital that approximately $20 million in Medicaid from adjustments from prior years that were brought into and settled in this fiscal year. There was also a major Medicare audit adjustment and another $5 million coming in from that. So we have those items coming in. Overall, if we add back depreciation, that the hospital is generating about $63 million in cash this year, which is and they've improved their cash balance significantly during the year. There's one. Did we pass up one? We in your package. There's an important slide in your package that somehow got deleted here. I wanted to show the administrative costs of the University of Illinois compared to our peers. It's our institutional support.
Big Ten total.
Yeah. You know, it's the Big Ten University's total systems. It was page 14. I don't know how we. But anyway. But the average institutional support this is essentially the administrative support measured against total expenditures for the university. Right now, the University of Illinois about 5.7% is the average for our peers is 6%. Those that basically exceed us, obviously Northwestern is an outlier at 12.4%. But Purdue is at 9.9%, Minnesota at 8.4%, Penn State at 6.9%, Indiana at 6.3%. Then Illinois at 5.7%. Again, the average is 6% in costs. We have Michigan State at 5.4% and Wisconsin at 5.1%. The last three, Ohio State, Michigan, and Iowa, at 4.7%, 3.7%, and 3.7%. They're really distorted because they have such a large medical facility in their denominator of this calculation of their total costs. So that's what causes their level, their percentage to be essentially so low in comparison to the University of Illinois, for instance, has about 10% of that denominator basically as our medical center, whereas at Ohio State or Michigan that number might be as much as 40% of the denominator would be the cost of the medical center. Wanted to close on a high note. The utilities, $114 million budget for 2010. We are projecting to be some $16 million under budget for purposes of fiscal year 2010. And the last slide here, it really is a combination. Joe, go to the last slide, please. It's really a combination of basically our pricing effort that's really in the budget. We've been forward purchasing our costs for natural gas and now for electricity. That's been helpful to us. But by and large, I wanted to basically have this slide up here because both the campuses have been very good about their usage and about their on the side of the consumption side. The conservation efforts have been there, and we're seeing that in the numbers too. So that we basically are enjoying essentially this type of a benefit as a result of that consumption effort in combination with our pricing efforts and forward purchasing our gas and electricity. And that would conclude it with
questions.
What portion of our revenue goes to simply maintain the major assets?
Is there an easy answer to that? About five.
Plan fund.
Yeah, about five. In a rough percentage.
Plan in total, you know, that's maintenance, utilities.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll verify.
Walter, what goes into institutional support on your page 14?
Well, I think it's really would basically, as described by the this organization, the KUBO, the National Association of College and University Business Officers, it's really the administrative costs as they identify them. All the administrative costs, and since we have a focus on some reorganization and administrative costs, but this is just really the start. Aha, where did that appear from? Very good. You know. Well, I was told I had to cut the presentation 5% too. I was chagrined that this was probably the most one of the most important slides as far as a metric in here where we stand. But this is when we say institutional support, it's administrative costs of the university measured against the total costs of the university. And this is a very good comparative slide. And what I was referring to, the last three in particular, the Ohio State, Michigan, and Iowa, why are they so low? Is because they have such a large medical center in their denominator in their costs, and that's what's driving down their percentage. You can see that we are below the average, and right, probably you could just say in the middle of the pack as far as our peers.
And this number, 5.7%, includes all three of our universities?
Yes, this is the total university. The numerator is administrative costs. The denominator is essentially all costs.
Thanks. Thank you.
Further questions? I would note that the president spent some time at two of the three lowest cost areas in his career, so look forward to your insight. Walter, anything else?
Expand the hospital.
All right. Mr. Chairman, that concludes our presentation.
That's great. Thank you very much, Ed. And the agenda that you had put together and reported on was incredibly extensive. We appreciate the work of the committee because
great committee.
There's a lot of burden that is placed on you all. I think now it would be great if we went into executive session to discuss employment and appointment matters and perhaps some litigation as well. Tom, is there
a second?
All in favor?
Aye.
No one's opposed. So I think we're going to, do we stay in here, Michelle, or do we go in the other room? 213 right down the hall? Okay, great. Thank you.